Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. On this show, hosts Ryan Henderson and Brett Schaefer analyze businesses and riff on the world of investing. As a quick reminder, Chit Chat Stocks is a CCM Media Group podcast. Anything discussed on Chit Chat Stocks by Ryan, Brett, or any other podcast guest is not formal advice or recommendation. Now please enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Chit Chat Stocks. This is our Investing Power Hour number 105, and we've got a lot on the slate today. For anyone that doesn't know how this show works, it is a live show on YouTube that we record every Thursday, typically at 10:30 a.m. on the West Coast, 1:30 a.m. on the East Coast, or 1:30 p.m., sorry, on the East Coast, and we talk anything financial markets. We've got some news this week. We've got some requests from listeners to talk about as well. And we go for an hour and just riff on the world of investing. So with that, Brett, how are you doing this morning? We are talking some retailers, which I know you have a distaste for. So have you changed your mind at all?
Yeah, I think the question I was going to ask you is long Lululemon or Nike? Both are in a drawdown. We've had a lot of people as I like to toss out questions on the old Twitter machine right before we start, see what people want us to talk about. And a lot of people are talking about those. So those are in a drawdown. They seem like they're getting fairly cheap if you believe in the long-term growth story still. So yeah, don't typically like apparel. I would say you said I don't like retailers. I don't like specific retailers, which is apparel and fashion retailers. But excited to talk about it. We got other stuff this week. We have some Amazon news I thought was quite funny. And then I left myself a note last year that I think maybe around the AI bubble that maybe we could discuss. But that won't take too long.
All right. Before we get to things, I want to give a quick word from our friends, our sponsor at Public. Options traders, listen up. I want to tell you a little bit about public.com. But first, have you ever actually thought about all the fees that you're paying to trade options? Aside from the regulatory fees, there are commissions and most platforms charge per contract fees as well. That's what makes today's sponsor, public.com, so interesting. Public doesn't charge commissions or per contract fees. And in an industry first, they offer a rebate of up to 18 cents per option contract traded. Check it out. If you trade 1,000 option contracts on Public, you'll get up to $180 in rebates. If you trade 10,000 contracts, you could earn almost $2,000. More importantly, the rebate means you can maximize your profits and minimize your losses. To recap, there's no commissions, no per contract fees, and up to 18 cents on every contract traded. See why NerdWallet recently awarded Public 5 stars for options trading and start earning up to 18 cents per contract traded only at public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. Options are not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures are in our podcast description, U.S. members only. With that said, how about this? Spotify up 8% today.
That's price right.
Hikes.
Price hikes, CFO.
A doubter across the board, and it a shareholder for a long time, and I should have known that as soon as I grew too frustrated, it would turn things around. So
hey, I convinced you. We bought back after we sold for some tactics. We bought back in at around 100, and at about 160 or 170, you got very, let's say, antsy to get out of it. But you know, you're still open minded, I'd say, fairly.
Yeah, I was not expecting Daniel Ek to kind of pivot as quickly as he did. Daniel Ek, the CEO of Spotify, went from really growth mode to suck mode pretty quick. And I think, honestly, Mark Zuckerberg maybe inspired him to lean up the operation there a bit. And I think they are friends, if I'm not mistaken, or at least buddies in the tech world. So
remember that Snoop Dogg photo? Classic.
Yeah, what, Zuckerberg, Daniel Ek, and Snoop Dogg?
And the Napster guy.
Who? Oh, gosh, what's his name? Sean something?
Sean Parker? Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Anyway, they are raising prices, it looks like. Now, my first thought here, I think it's $1 to $2. I'm not sure how it'll shake out because there's different plans in different countries and all that, but I think the word is that they will raise prices $1 to $2. One second here. Sorry, I've got a sneeze that's right on, right about to come out.
But I think
it's subsided. It looks like they're going to raise prices $1 to $2 across their North America plans. And my first thought was, oh, great, like as a customer. And then I thought for a second, would I switch? I'm like, absolutely not. I probably use it 2 to 3 hours a day. So if I'm paying $12 for a personal plan, I really don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a lot of family plans. There's a lot of all that good stuff. I thought they were going to go more the route of raising it by $1 or say 5%, something like that, every couple of years. But they didn't raise it for, I think, 10 to 15 years, at least in the United States. So maybe they have a lot of catching up to do. We'll see. I mean, the thing that's different between them and Netflix is there's not operating leverage on the price hikes, so it's not as big of a deal. So I think some of it, people might be getting a little aggressive with bidding up the stock here, but what about 300 again today? So for anyone that's held for the long term, congratulations. Hasn't been me, but it's finally doing well again. I think it IPO'd at like 150, 160. So, you know, it's been a long time coming.
Do you think there's any world in which 10 years from today, Spotify's gross margins are above 35%.
Yeah. But also, I think 10 years from now, they can be generating, whether how low the margins are, I think they can be generating $10, $12, $15 billion in gross profit fairly easily. Now, I don't, their $100 billion revenue big goal thing that they toss out there, I don't know if that's realistic. I like that they have a goal of becoming a $100 billion revenue business over, you know, extremely long term. That's great, but might be a bit ambitious. So we'll see. Hey, the media, entertainment, music, audio industry is quite large, and if they're the dominant player, if they're the YouTube of this market, who knows? But that's not what we're planning on talking today. Ryan, what was your first topic? You had
it's
Disney.
So Nelson Peltz, the activist investor that stepped in on Disney, and he's been kind of running this proxy battle to not even dethrone Bob Iger necessarily, but just be a voice on Disney's board of directors that isn't just a Bob Iger best friend. Because just to be clear, every single person on the board of directors for Disney was appointed by Bob Iger, except for one. And I would not be surprised if it's just a bunch of yes men around him. And like, Peltz might not be the right guy, but at least he has a better incentive than the rest of them. So
yeah, true.
It surprises me. Basically, he lost this morning. No one.
Oh, he did. Yeah. It came through. Oh, wow.
They are not going to vote him to the board. So, and Bob Iger was going around, you know, patting himself on the back. Finally, this proxy battle's behind us. So now we can focus on the business. Like, oh, that's been the problem.
Yeah.
It's like, you haven't been focused. That's concerning.
Yeah. It hasn't been you. It hasn't been YouTube, Roblox, Netflix, everyone staying ahead of you. Well,
I am going to say it, right? Like, I'm a Bob Iger hater. I think he's focused on his own reputation and how he's perceived as opposed to actually generating value for shareholders.
I agree.
You've seen it. He has like political ambitions. You've kind of seen that expressed before. He wants to be sort of this cultural icon beyond just a chief executive at Disney.
Right. And I wonder whether creating shareholder value is one of his primary goals. Now, with a CEO, we don't need someone that's you know, from an investor perspective, we don't know, need someone that's saying, all I want is to create shareholder value. I'm going to squeeze and just ruin everything for everyone else in my ecosystem. But you have to have some focus on shareholders. And I don't necessarily think Iger does. I think he cares about empire building and, like you said, fame. I wonder if we're going to look at Iger in 20 years like we do with Jack Welch. I guess the story isn't over, but I wonder if it's going to be similar.
Sorry, I was on mute. I think there's probably a good chance that happens. Also, we didn't really talk about
this. Over yet, though. Story's not over. They could totally turn things around. That could be completely wrong, but I think it's a possibility that any investor should consider.
Yeah, and people want to talk about the Marvel acquisition, the Star Wars acquisition, which I don't even know if that's the Pixar acquisition. Those are great. But in terms of scale of the business, he basically erased the value of some of those acquisitions with the, Fox acquisition five years ago now? Six?
Yeah. I also think that there's a risk they, juice these acquisitions pretty aggressively with low quality content, and now people are sick of it. Like, the return on invested capital, quote unquote, from the acquisition might decrease over the next couple of years because we've seen a lot of pushback from the core fans. I mean, we even have an investor focused audience, and thank you for the people commenting today. A lot of people just go, they single-handedly destroyed Marvel and franchises. What Bob Iger has done, I'm reading this from the comments right now, has done to Star Wars and Marvel is reason enough to hate the man. And, you know, personally, I have some of that feeling as well. And I think as an investor, you can't really ignore that, because when you looked at, say, 5-6 years ago, you could have said, well, the financials look fantastic. Like, they're putting up such records at the box office. But then when people get tired of this stuff and the quality is actually not there, eventually that comes home to roost.
No, yeah, it's a little bit of, it gives me a little bit of confidence for investing based on gut feel, because there was a point with Disney where sort of after Endgame with Marvel, I started to get the sense that the quality was deteriorating, and it felt like it was high volume, not as much time spent on the production. And maybe that's not the case, but for me, and I couldn't tell if it was like, am I just getting old and the content isn't meant for me, or is the content right, getting worse? And, you know, all my friends are saying the same stuff, like the content's getting worse, but they're my friends, they're my age, you know, maybe it's just not meant for me. But now we're seeing the numbers in the box office. They have put out so many low quality films that there used to be something about releasing a Marvel movie where, if I didn't know the character at all, I'd still go to the theater just because it was a Marvel movie. There was the brand there. It was worth going. That just doesn't exist for me anymore.
Yeah, we have one comment that said most of Disney's wells, which I think is a comparison to Disney, or excuse me, Buffett's analogy of Disney, where they have the well, the oil well that basically you can keep regenerating because you're just making up franchise characters that are popular over and over again. He said most of Disney's wells have been poisoned, which I think is a good analogy here, but maybe there's a cure somewhere along the line. My hot take, and this is an entirely different topic, is I have the same feeling about Chipotle, but I think I'm probably wrong. Or I think the quality's gone down, but the numbers haven't shown it yet, but I think I'm probably wrong. I mean, I wouldn't bet against the stock or anything.
There's no Chipotles in Costa Rica, right?
No, I mean, they're not going to have it. Latin America is probably their toughest market. I don't think they're going
to. Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it's like, we have an America, you're a lot of your guys' type of food, and we just made it American style. You like it, right?
Yeah, that would be a little bit of a tough transition. I don't know. I mean, I think part of it might just be for you, Chipotle fatigue. And the same for me.
But some people have it like every day. I had it like once a month, twice a month.
Here's the thing with Chipotle for me. It still is, even with the introduction of other concepts like Sweetgreen and Cava and these other sort of, factory line type quick service assembly restaurants, almost, fast casual. Yeah. It's still one of the only places that I can get a healthy meal at a decent cost that's actually quite filling.
Right. No, I agree with that.
And I can't believe no one's ate away at that, like, market. Panera almost had it, and they kind of went the wrong direction, it seems like. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Here, A, Subway revamp. Thoughts? Is this, can they rise to prominence again?
No, I think I read they still have way too many stores. I think they got to work through that, but maybe they have the right leader at the helm now. I'm not sure, but they overbuilt their stores just so much that, yeah, I would be worried about, well, I guess I don't know the exact price difference, but them versus Jersey Mike's, because Jersey Mike's is making a real national push to become the Subway, or excuse me, the sub shop place. But
with Danny DeVito as the cultural icon there.
They're doing a lot of advertising. The brand ambassador. We have a comment here from Tyler, says, do you think Starbucks customers have fatigue? I don't think that would be necessarily my worry as a Starbucks investor, because
I don't think so at all.
They seem pretty darn good at refreshing. I think maybe, I mean, people laugh at when you say Ozempic risk for stuff, but given the sugary drinks and the high margins they get on that type of stuff, I'd maybe worry about that, but that's at the edges right now.
But do you really think people are going fatigued there?
They're really good at refreshing the menu. They're very, very good at that.
I guess I don't really know what changes when people take Ozempic, but I would guess that more people are going to Starbucks for the caffeine over the sugar.
So it reduces your, say, cravings for addictions. So sugar, fat, possibly caffeine, although I don't know for sure, but it makes it easier on average to like resist anything you're kind of addicted to that's bad for you. Well, maybe good for you too, but so that's what I would think about with that.
Yeah. I'm skeptical that people are getting Starbucks fatigue. You could have said that 10 years ago and they've been raising prices mid single digits for a decade. I got a Starbucks a block away. I mean, everyone could say that in the Seattle area, but I've got a Starbucks a block away, and every single morning the line is packed. It is a part of their day. It's a part of their daily routine. So I don't think it'll. I don't see the Starbucks fatigue occurring. At least that's my anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I would not be worried about that either. But who knows? Who knows? Okay. Let's go through. I think you had three topics. Let's maybe hit yours first, and then we can do Lulu and Nike. I think that could be a fun like middle segment, especially we can toss up some good charts here, and then we'll get to some other stuff at the end. You read some hedge fund letters. I'm curious why. Was this for work? What were you doing?
Yeah, it was. I wanted to highlight different part of our platform. I still haven't done it yet, so I'm working on a piece that basically goes through. I'll just use this as a chance to promote FinChat. There's a hedge fund letter aggregator on FinChat where if you like reading hedge fund letters, it basically compiles all them into a single list, and it's pretty nice. It just directs you to their different pages. So I was going through and just looking for the best ones from the quarter, and I realized that there are some cliches that every one of these hedge funds seems to like toss out. First of all, I'm blown away by the amount of hedge funds that are in business that have underperformed in total return since inception. Lots. Secondly, basically every single one that I read was like, yeah, we underperformed, but the S&P is being driven by the Mag 7, which is unsustainable. That's like the only, and they're just saying like it accounts for 35% or whatever, 30% of the S&P 500. That's unprecedented. And if we look back at 1990, the top 10 companies versus today, obviously that's not going to last. I'm like, everyone's just rationalizing their underperformance. And all it did, reading all these hedge fund letters, was make me more bullish on Mag 7.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I threw out a chart, or excuse me, I think a tweet about Google. I think Google's PE is still slightly below the S&P 500 average. I believe it's at like 27, and the S&P 500 average is at like 28. And then I toss that out there, and then someone responds classically. You know, they say, well, if you exclude Mag 7, it's above. And I was like, but then it's not the S&P. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. I think
if you took the Mag 7 one by one, I think for just about everyone, you could sit there and say, you could make a case for why it's one of the best businesses in the world and why it's going to grow a double digit earnings for the foreseeable future. Maybe you could make the case the other way, I think, for a couple of them. But everyone puts the Mag 7 in this box like it's an overvalued cohort. But when you look at each one, you say, wow, these are the best businesses in the world. And I could see how each one could perform well.
Yeah. What's interesting is I think people don't really look under the hood. Yes, we've talked about this plenty of times where NVIDIA and Tesla might be rough. Like, that's tougher because, you know, Tesla's in a cyclical market. NVIDIA is also, I guess, in a cyclical market and could be overearning, TBD though. But if you look at Amazon, it's pretty clear their margins are going to expand to 10% or higher. And that's not being shown in the trailing valuation whatsoever. So I think, yeah, I guess I don't read many hedge fund letters, but I've always seen a lot of people joke around about, you know, online and stuff, how like, oh, just read another letter from this person and they're complaining yet again about Magnificent Seven, like blah, blah, blah. It's been 10 years in a row. And maybe you're right. I always thought that was kind of just a narrative out there but
my biggest pet peeve is people looking at their returns relative to other funds.
Yeah, so, not focusing on their own stuff.
Like yeah.
Exactly.
And even John Hempton did this to some degree this year. And I like John Hempton. I like the way he invests. I think he's a pretty fun guy to read his research and stuff because he's very frank. But he said something along the lines of, our short book performed this well, which look at all the other short. There's a lot of other long short companies that have gotten destroyed and we didn't. That's like, it doesn't, I don't, I hate that. Just like,
yeah,
look at all the funds that blew up this quarter. We weren't one of those. So we did good. That's like, okay, but what returns did you give for? I could have gotten 20% out of the S&P this year.
True. Yeah. And we have a comment here that says, funny, the hedge funds didn't mention their outperformance against Mag 7 in 2022. And it's like, yeah, that it's true. And I have some sympathy for that. If we're in a big market bubble or something like that, and maybe people argue we are right now. I don't think it's nearly as bad as 1999, but that doesn't mean there can't be a little pop here. What just irks me when reading stuff is, again, what you mentioned, not focusing on, like, time and time again, just complaining about other stuff coming up, but not focusing on what you're actually investing in. And like, oh, okay, we invested in this. Like, it's been flat this year, but we still see good fundamental performance, blah, 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 blah. And at the end of the day, your job is to make money for your clients. So, like, either you can admit that you're doing poorly, which it's just a weird world, because if you admit that you're doing poorly, I guess you risk redemptions. It's a tough market out there.
You got to look pretty for your investors.
That's
true. Look
pretty. Yeah. And, a lot of people like, portraying confidence and all that good stuff.
False confidence.
Yeah, exactly. But do you want to talk Nike and Lululemon, or do you have anything else here?
Let me kind of blend this into the FinChat ad that I was supposed to talk about. I'll pull up Nike right now, actually. Sorry, I know you guys can all hear that typing. So pulling this up on FinChat, this is our shameless plug to go out and check it out. It is a stock research platform. We use it every day. And frankly, it just keeps getting better and better. Full disclosure, I do work there, but I'm seeing these improvements day to day. And I really do feel like it's one of the fastest improving stock equity or equity research platforms out there. Nike, let's see here. Let me pull up their price to earnings or last 3 years. Well, yeah, it was at about 44 in 2021, 47. And today, after a, let me check out the drawdown here. It's a 49% drawdown from its most recent highs. 49% drawdown and still trading at 27 times earnings. Oof.
All right.
That's, yeah. That is really staggering.
Yeah, let me go in and share the screen here. I know for some reason, Ryan, I don't know why you're always scared to share the screen, or maybe you just forgot there, but it'd be very nice for the YouTube audience. I have Nike pulled up with a couple things here. We can start out with them. And we had a comment that said, don't sleep on Ulta either. I saw they're in a drawdown as well. So maybe we can look at all of those, even though Ulta is a little bit different. So first thing, yeah, I see in the chart here in the top right corner, 50% drawdown for Nike. And let's actually look at total return over the past 5 years. Only 11.5% cumulative, so pretty flat. I guess just as look at sales. We did this on the Rapid Fire Stock Pitch 1-2. What's interesting is that sales keep climbing higher. Yeah, there's been a little bit of a slowdown here, but if you look back over the last 10 years, I mean, 6.5% growth. I don't think that's very surprising to me because we get, consistent, just like slightly above inflation. I'm not surprised about that. And how do I even say this? Like they're, maybe here's a good way to start. And I should say that neither of us follow Nike very closely. We're not reading conference calls, transcripts. We're just kind of looking at the numbers and what we feel. Do you feel like their moat has weakened or widened over the last 5 years?
I'd say it's about where it was. I don't think it's widened. For me, I was thinking about this yesterday. If you gave me two athletic shirts, and one has the Nike logo and one does not, the Nike logo, the one with the Nike logo, is worth more to me because I have the trust in that brand. I would pay more for that one. So I do think, and even with all the new ones popping up with Lululemon and all these others, I still think Nike has a lot of trust in its brand. I wouldn't say the moat has necessarily shrunk.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's still strong. I still trust them to build a high quality product. I'm seeing earnings yield. It's not that high compared to pre-pandemic, but I guess a lot of, comparatively to other stocks, it's a little bit better. We're at a 3.8% earnings yield. I don't know. What are your first thoughts on them? Like,
I just don't love apparel companies in general. The free cash flow is constantly lumpy. There's always inventory struggles. Even for a company like Nike, there's inventory struggles.
Well, it's earnings yield, 3.8%.
No, I don't think that's attractive. But
Okay.
I don't really want to own it. I mean, the issue, and it's kind of a paradox, is that I don't want to own an apparel company at an expensive multiple because things could go wrong. I don't want to own an apparel company at 10 times earnings because I think it's in a down, like, I think it's a business that's failing. So it's like, I don't want it cheap. I don't want it expensive. I'm just not going to own it because I feel like with most of these brands, I have zero visibility into what the next 10 years looks like.
Okay. Let me share with some Lululemon here and see what maybe looks better. Oops. All right, I'm sharing the screen for any listeners. I'll try to work through it and talk through it a little bit, but anyone can look on YouTube or Spotify and you'll get the video, and the charts all come from FinChat, user code 15% off. any of your premium plans.
We got a Sarah code. finchat.io/chitchat.
Link. Thank you for the correction there, Ryan. I'm seeing pretty strong gross profit growth. Don't see really any slowdown here. I mean, we're at a 22% CAGR over the last 10 years. Seems like strong growth again last fiscal year. If you look at operating income, also at an all-time high, $2.2 billion, another 22% CAGR. And then if I look at the ratios of, earnings yield, 3.3% trailing. What do you think there, Ryan?
I like this one a little better, but let me share another KPI with you that I don't think you'll like.
Okay.
clicking around. I'm going to share my screen so it makes it just easier for everyone. Lululemon, if we go to their segments of KPIs here, Brett, can you see this?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. China, People's Republic of China, company operated stores, 127. Total stores, 711. So roughly 15% of their stores come from China.
Is it a little bit of a Starbucks story where a lot of growth is supposed to come from Asia, from East Asia?
Yes.
Specifically China? Yeah, it sucks. Yeah. And what percentage of total revenue? There. Yeah, this is perfect way to use the KPIs. What percentage of total revenue is from China, roughly?
Do they break that out? Oh, here. Yes, they do. Let me get rid of some of the old ones here. People's Republic, rest of the world, Canada, US. I can just stack this here. It looks like
China as a percentage of total.
Yeah, roughly 10%.
That's not the end of the world, but
growing.
Yeah. But it is growing as a percentage. That is a slight concern. I would like something like Lululemon at maybe 5% earnings yield. I know that's asking a lot for investors that have seen it at PE of 50, right? That's a big difference. But that's what I'm personally comfortable with something like this, where you're taking a little bit of trend risk. I get that they've had a long-term popularity trend, but I think that's where the risk reward makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, the chart can look like the prettiest thing in the world. I'm looking at it right now. They have grown total revenue by nearly 10x over the last 10 years. But that's the trouble you get in with brands. Like if consumer sentiment around a brand sours, you are paying a pretty penny for something that could go the complete wrong direction. This is not software. The customers are not locked in here.
So
there is competition coming from other brands like this. Athleta, I know, within women's apparel is very popular.
Aloe. For some reason, I get a bunch of Aloe ads on YouTube. They got the targeting off, but they're plowing money into that.
But I could seriously see a situation where this continues to compound revenue at 15% for the next 5 years. And exactly. We're like, damn, we could have had this at 20 times, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It would be unsurprising to me if earnings were double in 5 years. There was an analyst out today, though. Now, this is kind of showing maybe the sentiment has turned to negative on Lululemon, that they said that Under Armour risk is there now. Which I think might be a bit of a stretch because Under Armour did commit accounting fraud and clearly I guess at one point the brand was pretty strong, but that wasn't for very long.
That was the third pillar for a while. It felt like to me here in Washington, it felt like it was like the third brand behind Adidas and Nike for a while.
Yeah, I guess Puma, niche. There's some niche ones out there for specific sports, but general apparel, general athletic apparel. Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if it would go the way of Under Armour, because that was, like you said, there was accounting fraud. I thought at first when you said there's Under Armour risk, I thought you meant the Under Armour brand is being revived and there's threat of competition.
What about, now I'm going to pull some up here. We had some comments here. Ulta Beauty. I'm going to share my screen again.
So I know they said something at a conference yesterday that basically guided for no growth.
Yeah. Now, yeah, they may have done that. And I will say that you know this fairly well, but you're not, I don't follow it very much at all. You follow it slightly, or I wouldn't, you know, not an expert on it. Since last 10 years, I'm seeing 15% revenue growth. And I guess if you believe that's going to continue, let's kind of look at the valuation here and see how attractive it looks. Trailing, let's just do earnings yield again. Now, see, this one's at a 6% earnings yield. I can even compress that so people can see how much it's changed in the last couple of years. It's gone from like 1%, 2.5% to 6% earnings yield. So that's, if we flip that around to a PE, about 17, according to FinChat here.
Of the three that we have discussed here, I like Ulta the best. I think they are, there's less brand risk, right? Because it's not, you know, they're selling a whole bunch of different brands. It's something that's pretty immune to online competition because people want to try the makeup on. They want to see what it looks like on them. They want to smell the fragrances. They trust Ulta. And they've done a really good job with their omni-channel efforts. But I think store growth is going to look very different over the next 10 years relative to what it looked like over the last 10. They're going to have to kind of pull, I think, a Home Depot where they really increase their per store productivity as opposed to just growing footprint. So, I mean, for anyone that hasn't followed Home Depot, their store count is basically flat to what it was in 2009. They have done a phenomenal job generating higher sales per square foot over the last 10 years and really improving the operating margins and unit economics at the store level. I think Ulta's going to have to do that, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a big transition to go from a capital grower to a capital return story, but so far I think Ulta has some good signs they can make that transition where we're seeing consistent share repurchases. I just pulled up on FinChat. Total shares outstanding have declined by at a 3% rate since 2015, which not bad. Actually, I think that's 2014, really. So at least the last 10 years. I like that. I could see like, okay, hey, we're going to grow a little bit less, invest a little bit more less for growth here. We're going to have more cash coming in, and hey, we'll just return it to shareholders. And if it's at a 6% yield and it can still grow, that's not a bad formula to me.
No, and there is some economies of scale here where they have so many stores, the brands have to be in there, I think. Right. It's not necessarily to the Home Depot level where they have all the negotiating power. Because you think about like the big cosmetics brands, I think Rihanna has a huge one. They can
still get sold on it. You have Amazon. Amazon, there's, you know, you can still sell on Amazon or your D2C website.
Yeah, but all the big brands choose to go to Ulta. And right. I have to imagine that that's because people want physical proof of concepts before they purchase online. So, and plus, if you've ever bought any sort of cosmetics, whether it's fragrances, anything on Amazon, it's not always great. There are a lot of bad.
If you're trying out
diluted, diluted fragrances, stuff like that. So bad sellers. With Ulta, you know, you can prove it first. You can go in there, you can try it, and then you can be like, okay, yeah, I'm going to keep it. I'll buy it. So I think they do have some economies of scale, probably some negotiating leverage, and I imagine that'll grow over the next decade. But I do think there's still some risk that these big influencer cosmetics brands go direct to consumer and have success with that, especially with their huge social presences.
Yeah. I like Ulta more than Lulu and Nike here too. Not buying either though. Neither of the three. I'm buying a GoGo Internet.
Yeah.
And Harbor Diversified.
But which
we did have someone say
this week.
Yeah, I did end up buying more. I should say a couple of days ago. Yeah, someone must have blown out there. Volume was quite high and microcap went down. But I think someone was saying we should talk more about GoGo on this episode. I should say we just posted one yesterday as we're recording this, but on Sunday it'll be from this Wednesday, a stock report on GoGo, which I think is pretty cheap. Ryan hopefully gives some pushback on there. It's an interesting setup. Either way, I think it's a very informative episode. But I think one indicator I have that a stock might be interesting is if we actually don't get that many listens on the episode. So the listens were down slightly than average. And I kind of think, okay, people really don't care about this thing. That could be good because it's not like sexy at all, or it's bad for listeners. But compared to like Hims and Hers or Elf Beauty, or what are some other ones we've covered where people seem to be really excited about it, I actually tend to fade that, even though Hims and Hers has actually crushed it.
Okay, before we move on, let's talk about our friend and our sponsor, new sponsor, firmreturns.com. It is a stock research blog that covers companies all around the globe. And actually, he is typically pretty active in the comments here. So if you see him, feel free to talk to him about some of his companies. But he really leans more towards the UK, which I can honestly say Brett and I do not discuss companies from the UK that often. So that's his home market, and he finds a lot of gems there. There's a lot of free content on his site. He provides ongoing updates on the companies that he's already invested in, and there's an archive of other long-form write-ups. To give you an example of how thorough he is with this research, he was recently digging into a company's accounts, and for one company he wrote up recently, he actually managed to find a material misstatement that had been missed by the auditors, and he reached out to management and they confirmed the error. So he is digging pretty deep. He's also size agnostic. He'll cover companies with market caps from 10 million to 40 billion. It's really all over and it's just global value. So check him out, and you can use our link to get, I believe it's 15 or is it 20% 20. Off, Brett? 20% off. Sorry, I should know that. It's firmreturns.com/chitchat. That's firmreturns.com/chitchat.
Link will be in the show notes.
Exactly. Anything else? Any other big news items from the week?
Did you see the leak about Amazon and the Just Walk Out technology?
Did you see this?
All right, let me pull it up right here. It is funny, but also I think insightful for the company and how they're trying to get a little bit more profitable. So here is I don't know what news site it was, but I'm going to read a screenshot from Twitter. Just over half of Amazon Fresh stores are equipped with Just Walk Out. The technology allows customers to skip checkout altogether by scanning a QR code when they enter the store. Though it seemed completely automated, Just Walk Out relied on more than 1,000 people in India watching and labeling videos to ensure accurate checkouts. The cashiers were simply moved off-site, and they watched you as you shopped. And the guy said, the tweet that went viral, sounds like Amazon relied on an API, a person in India, technology.
That's pretty good.
Which is good. That's a good joke. they're trimming this stuff back. And what's interesting with that company is there's still a lot of trimming that can be done. Like, let's get rid of we don't need that. That stuff never worked. It's been 10 years. It doesn't work. Have you been to any of those before? Because they test them all around Seattle.
Yeah, there is some stuff that they're doing at Whole Foods that I think works well. You just swipe your hand and it. Once you've got it set up, it'll just pay automatically with, I think, your Amazon Prime account or whatever card's on file there. So it does speed it up. I like that. But the Just Walk Out, I mean, I've never been to an Amazon Fresh store. I don't see myself going anytime soon. So the technology sounded cool, obviously, when they're relying on this API. Maybe it's not as revolutionary as we thought.
Yeah. there's just they were just in so many things that they gotta.
Yeah, it's
gotta it'll focus up on a couple of things.
Yeah, I'm okay with them trying stuff. To be honest, I maybe give more leeway to it than other people, but I think as long as they can continue to manage their e-commerce and cloud businesses, I'm okay with them experimenting.
Somewhat. Maybe not with $20 billion experiments, but small ones.
Yeah. How do you think they've done on the video content side of things?
I mean, fairly well, where, yeah, people just say it's pretty boring, you know, what their original content spending is, but they're building, I think, the advertising technology that can really make it profitable, where they're going to, you know, license old movies. They're going to have the free part where I think it's called Freevee or IMDTV or something like that. And, you know, they're adding the ads for every Prime member, unless you pay more. You have the sports content, which will have a lot of advertising, and then it connects to the e-commerce ads as well. So I think that is where they're going to make their money. And it's not necessarily going to be as much as the Netflix model, but it's more of going to be, okay, you can go to Amazon, you can watch anything, you can pay for any movies, you know, you can rent stuff. It's almost an all-in-one hub for your video stuff as you connect to Fire TV. But I would just be a little bit disappointed that they weren't Roku. They let Roku be Roku, and they didn't become that dominant player in the North American market. That would make them just much more.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
We got, let's see.
Roku, still not profitable.
They can't. That income statement's ugly.
Yeah. I think maybe 2 years ago, we had a discussion with Alex Morris, and it was basically just around platform power, like who has the leverage in those discussions. And he's like, you know, I think this can be a product that continues to grow and people enjoy it and they stick with it. But he thought the unit economics would accrue to the content providers. And I think he's been totally right. It's just a business that's hard to get profitable. Tyler asked, do you guys think Airbnb will start having internal advertisements like Amazon sponsored posts? So like Airbnb promoted listing, something like that, I believe is what he's referring to here.
Eventually.
I think he was asked about this on a...
Investors ask constantly, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those analyst calls. And he said something that I really liked, which is, I think that's the easy way out. It's an easy way to improve margins, but it's not necessarily the right way. And I think that's totally spot on. It's a lever that can be pulled for any scaled marketplace, but is it always the right thing to do? I kind of have my doubts.
Yeah. And it'll have this, like, you don't have to start it today. And then if you're doing, so what are they doing? Like, I think $100 billion in gross payment volume, but either way, if you do it then, and then you get like $1 billion in ad revenue, that doesn't mean you can't turn it on when you're at 500 billion and hit five. So yeah, I think they'll do it, and their margins are already great. I mean, they'll have, I think, incredible margins going forward once they add that, but I wouldn't expect it for a while unless things go poorly.
Yeah. And they try to be very host friendly. I wonder if hosts would have some pushback to that.
True. Yeah, they would. I mean, they've had pushback on plenty of things, especially during the pandemic when they're refunding customers. And yeah, I don't know. Let's see. We have some other topics. We got, another prior guest, interview guest joining, Rod Alsman, who covered Allison Transmission. Stocks actually, I think, doubled, maybe give or take, since he came on. That was a boring business that's actually turned into quite a compounder. And he said, missed the beginning, but loved the Go-Go review. Hey, that's another, go listen to that episode, guys. He thinks it's good. But yeah.
So you can, so people can get on board with the value trap.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see. Another person said, would you be willing to look at OTCM on a future episode? Seems like a reasonable price for a potential long-term compounder with wide moat, comparable to NASDAQ, MSCI, and ICE. Yeah, I think that's OTC markets.
It is.
That could be interesting as well if they're the dominant player in that. Really big household name.
Very profitable.
If it's run well, let's check out the margins right now. I'm going to pull up FinChat. What do you think, Ryan? That sounds like a good business.
I've looked at them before. Yeah, it is a pretty good business, if I remember correctly. I remember it being traded weird. Like, it's listed on something funny. I don't know. Maybe it was just I was having a hard time pulling
it up. That's part of the branding. You know, it's on a funny market, right?
it's not quite what I mean. I can't remember what it is.
Let's see.
You might run into the same problem as me.
19. EV to EBIT 19 here. Not bad. Especially if you think it's grown a lot. Let's check out the growth.
It's super illiquid, which is okay for the right person.
Yeah. Again, that's part of the brand. Decent growth, but I'm seeing a big jump during the pandemic, so I'd worry about that a little bit, but this is not a whole episode on that. Okay, we've had two people mention this. Eric Pohl says, I came in late, so maybe you addressed it already, but any thoughts on Google wanting to buy HubSpot? We haven't addressed it yet.
I'd be curious what Lena Khan's thoughts are.
I, as a shareholder, think that Google needs to be responsible, and I agree with Lena Khan. No more acquisitions. Buybacks only. Apparently, it's $32 billion, Ryan.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Also, I'm not actually
that's a good idea.
So, I'm a psychological shareholder.
Let's check that premium.
Yeah.
If Google just plowed money into buybacks, they could. I know they never would. They would never take on leverage and care about shareholders. But my God, the returns would look great in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and they still have room to get rid of a lot of.
And would
lot
it
of
be?
Fat.
Yeah. Would it be? Would it affect the business that they're not investing in it? You know, I think search would do just fine.
And they can still invest in it. Because right now it's a lot of... I don't need to go into the stuff that Musk seems to be tweeting about every hour of the day, but it's like that type of stuff where it's not actually focusing on making your business better. It's everything around the edges, you know, managers, HR, all that stuff.
Taking your victory lap yet?
On?
Tesla deliveries?
Oh, that's right. Low. Yeah. another bad quarter. I think it was...
Did you see what he said? He's like, all EV manufacturers are struggling. It's like BYD. He said BYD's deliveries were down 42% quarter over quarter. I was like, no one was talking about quarter over quarter. Just cherry pick some random point. It's like, oh, okay, then that makes your shares worth more.
I would recommend any listener that likes Tesla to read the Capital Cycle Theory book because it's textbook. It doesn't mean it can't be a good business over the long term, but right now that's clearly what's happening, and it's why they're lowering prices and they still can't spur demand because it's a highly cyclical industry and may be getting flooded with supply. But who knows? Maybe it normalizes over the next year or two. Who knows?
The other thing he did that was classic, that textbook Elon Musk material. And I don't know if someone told him to do this like 10 years ago, but he's been doing it religiously and it's worked great. He said, we're going to have our ChatGPT moment with self-driving in one year.
Just more,
no longer than two.
Yeah. No.
And that is his go-to. It'll probably be here in 1 year, no longer than two. It's like, one year comes, recycle the same old material.
I think in 2017 it was full automated drive from New York to LA is happening within a year. And then he doesn't say this one anymore, but he used to go, yeah, I think 2 years flight to Mars. He'd say then like 2016, it's like, it might, maybe 20. Yeah, hey, no, they just need more data. They just need more data for full self-driving. Then it'll finally arrive.
Hey, last point before we go. We do have to talk about one of our sponsors as well. We mentioned here earlier in the show, you heard us talking about the investing platform, public.com. That's where you can trade options with no commissions or per contract fees, and you get a rebate of up to 18 cents per contract traded. NerdWallet recently gave Public 5 out of 5 stars for options trading. If you want to see why, go to public.com and start getting a rebate of up to 18 cents per contract traded. This is paid for by Public Investing. Options are not suitable for all investors and carry significant risk. Full disclosures are in the podcast description. U.S. members only.
All right. We have a question here that actually relates to something. If you see our little doc here, Ryan, you can click on it too to see the chart. Someone says, what are your thoughts on online gaming companies, FLUT, which I believe is Flutter, as an example? Now, I have this chart here where... Now, the person that tweeted this said their opinion, sports gambling is a complete and utter mistake. And you can probably apply this to online gaming as well, where you have gross gaming revenue from legal sports betting in the U.S. In 2019, it was $0.9 billion, so $900 million. 2023, Ryan, $10.9 billion, absolutely soaring. I think this is one of those industries. Like, at first, you're like, oh, it's great. Buy these companies. Like, it's just a compounder, secular grower. But this is one of those industries that actually, it's dangerous if it grows too quickly because then it becomes a societal harm. So.
Yeah. I suppose it's the bummer for me.
I've seen it get bad. I've seen it personally get bad with people. So, it's.
Yeah, it can become an addiction for sure. The bummer really is that it doesn't feel like there's a real way to benefit as an investor, aside from obviously the societal
harm. What
about
MGM?
Potentially, but it seems like most of the value here accrues to the sports leagues in terms of engagement and interest.
Fair.
And there's not really a great way to be able to invest in sports leagues here in the United States as a public investor.
And you could buy the Oakland. Someone will sell you the Oakland Athletics, Ryan. They just moved to a minor league stadium. That's a deep value play right there.
I do think there are ways you can invest in the Braves. Liberty, I think, still owns the Braves.
Yeah,
the public trading.
Maybe. Who knows? They spin it out. Formula One. Spit it back. Yeah. I guess
but
Formula
it
One.
Just,
yeah.
No, it feels like a lot of the value is going there, and it feels like kind of a crapshoot in terms of who wins most of the customers for the gambling, like the online gambling.
Also, there's huge regulatory risk that it becomes like vape. I compare a lot to vaping.
I'd be surprised if they unwound a lot of the decisions though that quickly.
Well,
the states.
I think they would regulate it where. If they, again, I compare it to vaping, where I don't think people that are very old understand what's happening among younger people, specifically men. Like, it's so prevalent. And it's not legalized in every state yet either, I guess.
Where would those assets, where would that capital be flowing if it weren't flowing to pointless gambles?
I don't know. Yeah, where it's going to go next? Probably, maybe Robinhood. I don't know.
People would be buying Harbor Diversified if it weren't for the sports gambling. And it would be benefiting me.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I don't know like what this is. I don't get the answers from a societal perspective, but I just think as an investor, that's a risk that makes me a bit squeamish. Investing in, not squeamish from a moral perspective, but squeamish from a like downside risk perspective of investing in these gambling companies, because the governments can have an iron fist with these, you know, historically they have a lot of the times.
aside from Evolution, which isn't really, it's not on the sports gambling side of things, but as far as I know, I don't think they have any sports gambling type games. I don't really know a picks and shovels provider that seems to be doing really well.
Yeah. And I know there are huge fans of Evolution out there. I remember I said some negative ones and there's a lot of hate. Wow, EV to EBIT down to 20. What do you think, Ryan?
Very profitable business.
That's true.
I think that's one of the most profitable. Did you hear that?
20 times earnings. It used to be like 50. Is that intrigue you at all?
Yes. I remember being kind of... I remember not understanding the competitive landscape very well, so I would have to do some more digging.
Right.
More digging there. Is this something people can big for casinos can build in-house kind of thing? And I would just have to have a better sense of that before. Because, I mean, if this is something where big casinos start spending lots of money, that's potential. You know, you could have a cheap multiple for Evolution, but they could still struggle. There was something else that I wanted to talk about, and now I'm blanking on it.
Okay. Well, as you blank on that, I have one thing. We try to do losers and winners of the week, and I had a loser this week as myself because I forgot that I made this. I hope I made it for myself. 1 year ago, I sent a future calendar event to myself on April 1st of this year, so a couple days ago. And all it said, with no links, no anything else, was it an AI bubble? I was very perplexed when
and the verdict
that in my calendar. Well, am I right? I don't know. It was kind of like the I don't know. I was confused because I totally forgot making it, and then I was like, what was I even trying to say? Because I think I believed a year ago that we might have been in an AI bubble, but I should have been to my past self. Just wait, dude.
It's just you.
Wait. It's going to get even crazier.
Three beers deep, like in your Google Calendar, like sending yourself reminders.
We're in a bubble. I see someone hyping up NVIDIA at a party that doesn't know stocks, and I'm like, yeah. Send that reminder to myself. Tyler says that I need to renew that one for next year. I did renew it. But the thing is, if NVIDIA is at a $5 trillion market cap next year, and you know, I'm going to sit there and have the that same thing, and I'll be like, well, I don't know. Because I have no idea whether we're in a bubble right now. I think we probably are. If I leaned one way, I would say yes, but NVIDIA's number is still great.
All right. We started streaming 61 minutes ago, so probably all time right. To wrap.
Yeah. I do like to go a little over, so we have 60 minutes minus the ads, which we got to have people because we try to make a living here. But appreciate all the comments to everyone. Thank you for all that. You can join these live every week, Thursday. Well, it depends where you live, but Thursday morning, mid-afternoon. It's about 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, typically. Today we were at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, but about midday Eastern time, typically, is when we go live. Do these for an hour, and then they get uploaded onto your podcast player of choice. That's the Chit Chat Stocks podcast. As a disclosure, we are not financial advisors. Anything we say on the show is not formal advice or recommendation. Ryan, I, or any podcast guest may hold securities discussed in this podcast, may have held them in the past, and may buy, sell, or hold them in the future. Give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to our Substack and follow us on Twitter. That's Chit Chat Stocks on both. Thank you, everyone, again, and we'll see you next time.
We When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.